button is hit.
Thank you. I'd like to call this meeting to order, please. First, can I get a motion for the minutes for last month?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor is the minutes as written?
Aye.
Thank you all. Before we get started on the resolutions, I'm going to ask Tom Perko, he's here about his budget, and if you want to speak on it briefly, and then we'll ask you some questions.
Yeah, I'll speak on it briefly. Hello, everyone. Thanks for your patience and allowing me to be here tonight instead of last week.
Oh, and Ashley was invited too. She had a prior commitment.
Yeah. So just to make you aware of certain things, I mean, you all have a copy of our budget, and there were two line items, I think, that were reduced from what we requested. But the key to our budget this year will be the fact that with the current election now over and the powers to be in Albany, we're looking probably at early voting. I feel that'll come through. That'll be one of the first things they pass next year is the early voting. That's going to add an extra cost to running elections. So I don't know if we want to put some money aside in a contingency account or somewhere, but just in case that does pass, which I think that will. Another one that will pass, doesn't affect us next year, but will affect us in 2020, will be the same day primary, because next year we just have the September local primaries. So whether that gets passed this year, they might still pass it this year, but that's probably something they'll definitely pass for 2020. And the third thing, which will add an additional cost, all right, is going to be if they go with same day registration. So these are things we'll probably have to budget for in the future, as it'll require more staff, it'll require additional equipment, etc., etc. And right now we don't have a handle on any of those costs, but it's just something to be aware of. Yes.
Do you have an idea what possible savings though you would have if they combine the federal and state primaries?
You will definitely see a savings in the even number years, not in your odd number years. So in 2020, you will have a savings compared to the presidential race of 2016, in that the federal and state and local primaries would all be in whatever date they pick, say June. You'll still have a presidential primary that always will fall by itself. But you will save by not having that one extra primary that year.
And what's the, do you have an idea?
I don't have an idea countywide. I don't, but.
I mean, it really depends if there's one, if there's a Republican primary or Democrat and Republican primary, or if there's no primary at all.
And the number of polling spaces. I mean, really, basically, what happens is, unfortunately, we've seen polling sites change year to year, which has been problematic.
Well, the polling sites are an issue, especially if your districts increase in size and you need more poll sites. But they're an issue because the school systems just are not available to us. You know, with the current, we proposed many years ago that Election Day should be a state holiday just to close the school systems. Mm-hmm. They're the perfect poll site, but that fell on deaf ears. Yeah. So.
The schools
with the safety issues really don't want us, and we don't want to be any place we're not wanted. So, you know, we have to look, and when we have to look elsewhere, you have smaller sites. You know, we tried to get Gateway to be a mecca site in New Paltz. That didn't work, unfortunately. So what do? We break them up into little sites. We got, you know, districts at two new churches, and and still using Gateway, but smaller capacity, that's all. So, yeah, your polling sites, we're hoping that really next year, short of Gateway selling its building, only making one change in Ulster to a poll site, actually I take that back, there would be two changes to Ulster County. So we're trying to eliminate the poll site changes. We're trying to get more stability there. Mm-hmm. It's just tough to do. There's not a lot of locations that meet the criteria. That's just the things I wanted to make everybody aware of and why I felt I should be here. And I thank Mark, he's going to stand in for me. But I just wanted to make sure everybody was on board with what's climate change in Albany is going to bring to us here in Ulster.
Now, do you want to talk about the same-day registration?
I don't know. I don't know how quickly this might go through, but meaning that you could come in the day you vote and register the same day. So in other words, right now you vote affidavit. If you come in and you're not a poll book, there's an affidavit voting process, which gives us time to research where you were, who, you know, if you're entitled to vote, if, you know, your residence meets the criteria, et cetera, et cetera. Same day registration is going to let you walk in, give an Ulster County address, and vote that same day. So there's going to be there's going to have to be some kind of electronic proofing done right at the poll sites if that happens. Make sure it's not duplicate voting and et cetera.
Any more questions for Tom? Thank you, sir.
Thank you all. I appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Moving along, Resolution 212, setting a public hearing on proposed Local Law 16, a local law regarding campaign finance reform in Ulster County.
I'll move it for discussion.
I will second it. The sponsor isn't here. What's the pleasure of the... Hector, go ahead. Interrupt me if I don't look up.
No, it's okay. I'll wait. So I do believe the sponsor had... was okay with another postponement. We discussed both this resolution as well as its sister or brother resolution. I think because there has not been a second meeting about the subject, that we postponed both of them. So we postponed them both last month.
What number is the other one?
361.
Okay. Get a motion to postpone 212.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Thank you. Moving along to 281, establishing a policy to prohibit the use of public funds to place the likeness or name of elected officials on all promotional informational signs on county-owned property.
I'm a little confused with this one. This is the one that...
Wait. This is you and Legislative Maloney.
Oh, right, okay.
So you were going to amend it to just tighten up the language in terms of...
Right, and we have not discussed it. To be honest with you, we haven't got around to it.
So with your permission, postpone it?
Postpone it.
I'll move to postpone.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Dave. 324, repealing resolution number 24, establishing a policy to prohibit the use of public funds to place the likeness or name of elected officials on a PSA, non-commercial and non-political advertising by Ulster.
To repealing instead of amending.
Right, this is...
the hokey pokey.
I'll make a motion to postpone.
Second.
Why don't we just vote on it?
Well, neither sponsor is here tonight to talk about it. If we're gonna have a vote and vote it up or down, I'd rather have at least one of the sponsors here for it. So, I think that the prudent for us to do at this point is to postpone it.
Okay, whenever.
Second on the postponement.
Second.
All in favor of postponement?
Aye. I'm against the postponement.
329, adopting proposed local law 13 of 18, establishing Ulster County Electrical Licensing Board and providing for qualifications, examination, licensing, and regulation of electricians.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second on that?
Second.
Kenny, go ahead. Or Hector?
Thank you, Chair. So I did hear back from Office of the County Executive, at least with regards to pieces of this. At this time, I would be, so long as we are continuing to move forward, I don't mind if we postpone this tonight, but I believe there was, the main question was about the implementation period.
I said I didn't have any serious comments. I had looked it over, and we have no opinion either way. There was just one piece of the technical thing.
But I'm okay with a postponement if that actually gives you guys more time to kind of actually develop your questions or your comments further. Okay.
Move to postpone.
Second.
All in favor of postponement.
Aye.
Aye. And he said that so quickly.
Should we have just blocked postponement.
We do
well, sometimes you got to do it slow.
That's what we do each month.
This is making the sausage, Cap.
So I mean, you're already halfway through the agenda, so really don't mess it up.
Halfway through, I think we're... 361.
I'll make a motion to postpone 361 at the request of Legislator Rodriguez, I believe.
Well, at the request of the Democratic Caucus, but that's also Legislator.
Well, you are there.
Legislator Donaldson's bill, so I'm going to defer to David.
And I mean, I think we spent time on this and we're ready to roll. But if they want to postpone and come up with something, I do have certain things that I would not accept, obviously. And we'll deal with that when we deal with it. So I'll agree with the postponement.
Is that a second?
Second.
And for the record, this is 361, setting a public hearing on proposed local law 21 regarding campaign finance reform. All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Aye.
405, establishing a policy to require prior notice of the use of recording devices by officials and staff of Ulster County.
Kathy, make a
motion, Dave?
I'll make a motion for discussion.
Second. Thank you, Heidi.
You're the sponsor.
Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, on the, my problem with this is the same thing the problem I had before. It's the same thing. We are a one-party state, and many people are caught up. And like, for instance, to me, it would remove protections from an employee that may be getting sexually harassed or what have you, and they are not allowed. They have to turn around and say, wait a minute, before you sexually harass me, let me record you. I don't think it quite works that well. So I'll be a no on this.
I believe the policy is specific to county-owned devices. Anybody who's being harassed could use their own personal device as a member in a one-party state. I think that it's inappropriate for elected officials or others to use county resources to record people without their knowledge and consent.
Hector, you want to add in?
Thank you. So this particular measure looks eerily similar to one that was already in front of this committee before. Candidly, as somebody who originally sponsored this provision, I'm just going to go and say that, Mr. Chair, I agree with you. However, there were serious concerns raised in the Democratic caucus with regards to what Legislator Donaldson just said, which is, you know, there were issues of, you know, issue, you know, sexual harassment or, you know, other situations where if you have to kind of go through and sort of situationally sort of go and say, oh, I'm going to record you. Now, it's probably easier if we had a policy where you were just being recorded from the beginning in the same way that a bank or other institution might go and say, this, you know, this recording may be recorded for, you know, for quality assurance or for consumer, whatever. You know, when you kind of already are taping everything at that point, it's just easier as opposed to just having to then at that point say, wait, let me pull out my private cell phone to go and record the fact that you just said something illegal or something inappropriate. You know, I get those concerns. So I just want to just voice that. That came out of my caucus.
Yep.
That's also throw that into the mix and see how you guys feel about it.
I also know that there was a concern raised by several people about the phrase administrators and staff.
Yeah.
So I have an amendment here. So at least if we're gonna, you know, if we're gonna not act on it tonight, if we're gonna act on it tonight, at least I'd like to make this amendment, which replaces the words administrators and staff in two resolves with the words and personnel. Which I believe solves the ambiguity problem.
Yeah,
it's better than that as well.
So I'll offer that amendment.
I just want to be clear. So this does not apply to personal cellular devices or recording devices.
Right. It says that all elected officials and personnel are hereby prohibited from recording private communication transmitted by telephone, telegraph, radio, or other device between two or more individuals on any county-owned device, electronic, cellular, or otherwise designed to record and or transmit said communication unless prior notice is provided to all participants in the communication. It's very specific to county-owned electronic equipment.
Now, what's the question about the legality of it in the first place? By state law, I mean, is that, can we supersede state law?
Well, you're really not superseding state law. I think the, as I recall, when you guys were looking at the actual wording of this, that was the reason why it was clarified to only be county-owned material, you know, county-owned products that you couldn't use the recording on it. If it was broader than that, prohibiting people from any sort of recording, regardless of who owned it, I think then you might run into some issues.
I mean, to me...
But you can decide what you want to do with county-owned property.
Right, it's our, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the greater concern, I thought, thank you. The greater concern, I think, became that the situational instances where all of a sudden, you know, let's say you're being sexually harassed, or let's say that you've got somebody proposing something illegal that or you're catching something, that became sort of, I think, like the issue. I think the issue of us setting policy on county-owned equipment, I don't think that that's an issue. I don't think
that's all real. This does.
I know exactly. I wrote the original version of the damn thing. I'm just saying. So it's like a whole thing where I know exactly what it's doing. I'm just countering. Just we are one party consent, but that's also why you've got a private cell phone, right? The issue really becomes about if something's happening while you're on your work phone, right? Well, now all of a sudden you can't record that, or you got to go and get. You have to get your cell phone up to the damn phone to go and record it because they're saying something inappropriate. So, I mean, the one thing that came out of caucus was like, well, maybe we should just record, you know, have it standard where we're recording all the conversations, right?
Does that mean that
similar?
Like,
no, similar to like a bank, right, or to an institution where if there's an incoming call, there's a record of it, maybe for like 3 days, and then it gets deleted or, you know, flushed out. But then that way, in case somebody says, oh, hey, somebody said something or proposed something illegal, right, to, like, you know, do whatever, they then can actually go and say, oh, there's a recording of that on the system. That's, like, the one comment that even came out of caucus was basically, like, maybe we should just have it way more blanket or way more, you know, uniform. So,
sir.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's good to try to get creative with that. The problem you may run into is if you get a FOIL request or mm-hmm. something like that, you're going to have a ton of information.
Yeah, no, and we just don't have the capacity from what we've sort of gathered to be able to have a longer record of phone conversations. You probably have to wipe them out after like 3 or 4 days.
Dave, you got something to add?
No, I think Mark.
Mr. Wright, you want to
currently, you don't have the ability to record on the VoIP phones unless you had requested it or you had requested it. Nobody has requested it. It's been taken off of all the VoIP phones. But you would have to request it from IS. So the idea that you'd be able to just quickly, you know, you're being sexually harassed, you'd be able to pick up the phone and record a conversation, I mean, you'd have to set that up.
Well, we have recorders, for example. That's county equipment right there. It's a recorder, right?
Right.
Now, we're using it for its official purpose. But, you know, I'm saying that technically speaking, let's go and say you're hearing something on this phone. You can't use that piece of equipment to go and tape it. Right? Because this policy says you can't.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
And also, this policy says that when we open a meeting from now on, we have to announce that it's being recorded.
I know. It says private conversation. It doesn't say public. Jay would be in violation of this.
No, Jay would not be in violation because it's
well, the original thing that, you know, set all this off was the idea that the controller recorded, but he actually got that requested, and it was okayed by IS. So here we are making all these things that was already okayed by IS for the controller's office.
What's the pleasure of the committee? Vote on it? Postpone it? Pull it?
Don't look at me. It's not mine anymore.
It's at the... I mean,
we've got to vote on.
I'm comfortable moving forward, but if there are people who aren't, I've got, you know, I'm not.
I'll just assume send it to the floor and see what happens.
Well, I'm a no on it. I think it's.
No.
I really, I don't see a reason for it. I really don't.
Heidi?
I'd be a yes.
I don't have a problem sending it to the floor.
I mean, it's going to be...
See what happens.
I mean, I'll move to the amendment.
Yeah, you should write with the amendment.
It is. Yeah, I'll, you know...
Second on the amendment, Heidi?
Yes.
All in favor of the amendment?
Yeah. Aye.
Aye.
All in favor of the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll be a no for the very reason that I think somebody may be sexually harassed and will not be able to record it.
I'll be a no.
Four, seven, three, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 23, a local law entitled Ulster County Ethics Law, to be held on Tuesday, December 11th.
Now, is this the one that's created there on Orange County?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
I don't have a copy of that. I didn't get a copy of that law.
We're on 473. It's a new version of a revised ethics law to create a revised ethics board that I think resolves a lot of the concerns that were raised by the county executive's office and the county attorney's office.
Can you give me a synopsis?
Yeah, what this would do is it would create a board of ethics that would be all appointed by the county executive, but three of the members would be recommended by members of the legislature, one from the minority leader, one from the majority leader, and one from the chairman. Those three recommendations would be made for appointment to the county executive. And there's really no opportunity for him to say no to them. Yeah, it keeps the integrity of the general municipal law, which says that they're all appointed by the chief executive officer.
What would stop him from saying no?
Well, if he ever did choose to say no, I believe that that would be a court that would have to stop him from saying no.
Is there a time limit? Expire it if he doesn't sign it or approve it in like 10 days? Does it automatically happen?
No. If he chose not to abide by the law and make the appointments, we would need to take it to court.
Hector.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So through the chair to Chairman Ronk.
Yes, sir.
So the question I have is, I mean, how closely does this mirror Orange County's law, number one? And number two, what are we doing on the occasions when there is sort of a almost a conflict counsel situation? Meaning instances where counsel, whether it be legislative counsel or county attorney, would be conflicted out, and do we actually provide an attorney for the individual in the event of that conflict?
I mean, that would be subject to the appropriation of the legislature.
Okay. Well, that's the second part. But the first part, how closely does this mirror Orange County's law?
To my understanding, I, in my conversations with legislative counsel and as he drafted it, it's almost exactly what Orange County has, except for Orange County has them all appointed by the chairman of the legislature. I thought more parity would be due, and that's why I made them the chairman, the majority leader, and the minority leader.
But there's only three being appointed.
There's three being appointed by the legislative side. There's three that are appointed by the executive at his own recommendation. And then there's one that's appointed by the body itself. So the seventh, it's very similar to our redistricting commission,
sure.
Where the, you know,
or,
we appoint,
or the charter commission.
We suggest three, the county executive suggests three, those six get in a room and pick the seventh. There are times when the ethics board operates with just six if there is some sort of an impasse on the board, and that's actually what's happening right now in Orange County.
David and Jonathan.
I think one of my problems, I mean, I don't have a problem with this. I have a problem with the representation because I went to one with another legislator, and he was not, in other words, he would have had to was hire his own attorney, and that's what he ended up having to do. And what happened was, and then not only that, the county attorney recused themselves, but yet gave the exact charge to the person that they appointed to take over for it, and they used the county attorney's charges, all set up, all done, set up by the county attorney. Sounds a little conflicting to me. And it was really, most of it was over something that, as you know, CSEA contracts are, when they're passed, they're negotiated by the executive and the union, and then it comes before the body. So individual legislators have no say whatsoever on that contract. They do not part of the negotiations. And it's really part of your, when you vote on it, when you're saying that a legislator would not be able to vote on that because a member of their family is the CSEA, then where do you stop that? Are any of us allowed to vote because our pay is in the budget? So we have a direct interest out of that, don't we? So where do you stop that where they can vote and where they shouldn't be voting? I mean, I would understand if it was meant for, you know, say my wife was going to get promoted to another job and it was, in other words, and it goes before the legislature, I should not be able to vote on that. But on a CSEA contract that 1,300 other people are getting, and then you bring this up as a, and then not only that, you had people on the board talking about it in the press, you know, and going after this legislator. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have a problem with the way the board's set up, and I have a problem with the, of course, so this court of addresses that somewhat. But the problem is, what about attorneys? That means they recused themselves, and they said that our attorneys could not represent him. So that's, if any one of you are brought up on an ethics charge of any sort, you're going to have to bring your own attorney. Because our attorney cannot represent you.
Jonathan.
I definitely agree that this version that Chairman Ronks put forth from Orange County is the best version we've seen in terms of reforming the ethics board since the beginning of that process and, you know, looking at, you know, the experience of the legislator that Legislator Donaldson was talking about, there's absolutely no question that there needs to be some type of reform, especially in the sense of ensuring independence. What I do like about what I read through the Orange County version that Ken submitted is that it does provide for a per diem independent counsel for the ethics board, which I think is an important step that we currently don't have. But again, I think we do have the issue that Dave's saying is, what about members of the legislature? This is currently still like a black hole of what our rights are, you know, in terms of counsel. If we're, you know, summoned before the ethics board, I mean, we're talking about charges of $10,000 at a time. Mm-hmm. That they have our current ethics committee has the ability to fine you $10,000, sometimes up to multiple fines of $10,000. And so I think it's pretty significant when we can't even have our own personal legislative counsel who we personally appointed to represent our needs. So I think there is a gap somewhere. I don't have a perfect answer for it. But I think, you know, there needs to be some solution to, you know, what, you know, we have in place to, you know, one, independence of the board, so they're independent of the county executive's office, but also that we're not, as legislators, aren't at a disadvantage in these instances.
Hector, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, and it's also important to note, you know, it's also, whether we like it or not, you know, look, the county attorney is appointed by the executive. It's actually not approved by the legislature. So, because I believe this measure actually does begin to sort of move away from that a little bit, right? So,
yeah, the county attorney still advises the Board of Ethics, but in any case where they're conflicted out, the board can hire its own independent counsel.
Yeah, which I think maybe it sort of makes it a little bit more clear than before. But to maybe put a clarification on Lexer Hefner's point, not that it needed, but you know, to be more precise, it's also in situations where, for example, if we are in fact carrying out our official duties, right? If you're being charged by the ethics board for doing something that is either illegal or is a clear willful violation of county policy, and it's not part of your official duties, then yeah, of course you should have to go and pay for outside counsel. But if you're being charged about something specific to your official duties, not being able to have your caucus attorney then does become a problem. And the fact that there may be instances where that happens, and something that I think all of us always assumed we were covered, right? If there was something being brought up about our official duties, meaning I voted on X, and all of a sudden now I'm being charged with this, that you would assume your attorney would be there for you, and all of a sudden now there's sort of this whole new sort of situation that's developed. So just to put a touch of a clarification.
And I would just add to that too, you know, the fact is that, you know, we've seen on the floor of the legislature, we've seen it in caucus, with our own attorneys that we've entrusted by appointing them, or the ones who are advising us
on how we're voting,
on how, whether or not we should recuse ourselves in different ethical questions. So that's why I think it's, you know, very something missing in the...
Yeah, I mean, well, if that's the case, that actually creates even a greater conflict, right? I mean, so the problem you're going to run into, and why you're going to run into an issue if you try to use legislative counsel, and I'm not trying to get out of the case, but the problem is, if that we represent the entire body, if we're being charged to take care of one individual, other people may have disagreements as to what particular posture or whatever approach that one individual's taking. Now you're in conflict with other members of the legislature.
But I would say, technically, that would be the only counsel that would refer to would be Nick.
His title is technically legislative counsel as well,
but position doesn't even really exist in the charter, technically. Right. But as defined by the... So, like, counsel Iguchi, according to the charter, only serves at the pleasure of the Democratic caucus.
And
we individually have individual votes, and he's appointed through individual votes of each member of that caucus.
I don't want to throw Ragucci under the bus, but yeah, he has that role. But Nick and myself, we don't. So technically, I have an ethical obligation to everybody.
Yeah, and I understand that point. And
so the only way you're going to solve that is to retain private counsel. But here's the issue you're going to run into.
Picks it?
Right, there's going to be that, but this also applies to employees, it applies to officers, it applies to others. So if you're going to have that standard, then you're going to end up having to provide counsel to a whole host of people. You know, if you do that.
Good.
And
for leaders, I'm sorry.
No, it's one issue you get into with things such as this is when you have indemnification. Clauses or indemnification, of public officials and their official duties. The phrase, you know, acting in good faith, is often involved in the indemnification. We actually have an acting in good faith indemnification for civil rights lawsuits. If we're acting in good faith, and I, every time I read that, I think, in whose opinion, in good faith. I mean, you know, because my opinion of acting in good faith might be a lot different than somebody else's. You know, so I definitely think this is a conversation that we should have, but I think it's a lot more complicated because there could be a legislator who's acting in complete bad faith. Should the county be on the hook for providing them legal defense if you're acting in complete bad faith? I mean, if your actions and intent are nefarious,
but then again, you have to define what the bad faith is.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, what's good faith, what's bad faith, is sometimes in the eye of the beholder.
Just because he's accused of bad faith doesn't mean it is bad faith.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that there's a lot of intricacies to this that I think need to be hashed out.
But that's what the judge would determine.
But that's a separate issue than what we're discussing today.
Yes.
You know, the problem is you're dealing with the ethics board that is appointed, and virtually every one of them are presently appointed by the county executive, and they contribute to his campaign. And so you're taking a look at this thing, and you're trying to come up with what is ethical and what's not. And you have a guy, like, we know, you know, we're talking about one legislator who is, it can be kind of intense, but he's going after the county executive on a regular basis. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's up on ethics charges for voting for the CSCA contract was because he voted in committee and he voted and actually it was a.
Eventually, we're going to want to go into executive session here. I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, David, you've already. Well, yeah, let's we know who you're referring to. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, thank you.
You're probably right.
I mean,
I'm probably wrong.
I think that this is, you know, the intent behind the law is to try and create some parity and create an ethics board that we can believe is truly going to be independent.
But you have to have a way. I mean, you're forcing a legislator that's getting paid $14,000 a year to go get himself a side attorney to represent them.
Well,
because they can be charged $10,000.
Yeah, or more.
Or more, depending on each charge.
Yeah.
So basically, if you got three or four charges and they're, and you can't have a, in other words, to me, there's got to be some type of municipal office law that protects us. We always, legislator Rodriguez pointed out, we always thought we would be covered on this type of thing. I always thought that if something came up, you know, we would be, you know, we'd have representation, you know, if something like this comes up. And here, Ragucci went to... And he was advised by the ethics board that he could not come in there, and if he did.
And therein lies an additional problem, which basically is like we just. And by the way, I actually want to back up for a second, and I want to commend Chairman Ron for bringing this forward.
Sorry. Thank you.
Before we go down the road of beating the living crap out of you,
actually,
so, you know,
yeah,
we should actually say something nice, you know, for a second.
You're right, and I do too. Thank you.
You know, so you know, first off, there's that. You know, secondly, I think I know, Mr. Chairman, you probably were not anticipating this being moved tonight, or maybe you were. I don't know.
I put it in for discussion. I think that it deserves some.
I'm excited by this, and so just so you know, it's like, so I want you to take my comments in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
So when I brought that up, it's more about I want to be able to kind of work this out to get this thing passed. You know, secondly, I'm just going to just come out and say it. You know, I think we need to have a conversation about who is providing the guidance to the ethics board legally. Because I'm not exactly sure, you know, whether or not it's totally appropriate to have the county attorney's office provide that, especially when we already saw in an instance, which we won't get into the details of, that they were conflicted out, right? So as a result, we know that that can happen. And secondly, maybe we should be rethinking, maybe it should be county attorney and legislative counsel. I don't know. I mean, it becomes a whole thing where I think laying that at the feet of the county attorney, especially a county attorney that is appointed solely by the executive, is problematic.
I understand the concern. I don't know that it would be better to have the county attorney and legislative council do it. I feel like that's going to cause a lot of confusion. And then instead of having one party who's conflicted out, you've got two parties that are conflicted out.
What happened here, though. In the case
I understand that they're both conflicted out.
They're both conflicted out.
But I think that that's the system working the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
You know, because the county attorney conflicted themselves out, the board hired independent counsel, and the legislative attorney's conflicted out. So if you had them both.
But then we should just appropriate for independent counsel.
That's what
the ethics board. But this provides for that, provided that the county attorney is. I don't think that you want to have. Because
they don't need that often.
You're going to end up spending more money than you need to.
How often do they meet?
But,
once a year, though.
I mean,
unless they have some kind of charge.
My point is that the conflicting out is happening the way it's supposed to. It's provided for in this law. I don't know why we would force conflict out the county attorney on things where they wouldn't normally be conflicted out. I mean, attorneys have to live by a code of ethics, and you know, their code of ethics is really high, and you can be disbarred if you don't follow the code of ethics. I don't know.
I'm going to call on Mr. Ryder and Jonathan and Dave.
I will point out that this calls for hiring a secretary, which is not, you know, county staff, which is more independent than, say, someone from the county attorney's office. So it already takes a step, I believe, in moving this out of the county attorney's office. It does provide for the ability of the county attorney to provide legal advice, but also when they're conflicted out to go.
Dave, Jonathan.
Well, I think they're going to be called out, conflicted out, any time a county legislator is brought up, or I would assume, or the you know, the executive, any or even well, the comptroller or anybody that is part of government, I can't see how they wouldn't be conflicted out. Yeah. Both sides, everybody gets conflicted out on that. The only one, the only place where they wouldn't be conflicted out is if it's an employee that is brought up on a charge or some sort. You know, rank and file employee. But any time there's an elected official being brought up, it's got to be conflicted. I can't see how you wouldn't conflict out. But the problem is the way it worked this last time, the conflicting out. It was the county attorney was directed to draw up all the charges. Draw up all the charges, and then they hired an independent attorney to give them the charges.
Well, I think that's one thing that this solves is, you know, I think that you're concerned that the county executive appoints all the individuals who then do it. So this is going to provide some parity you know, equality on the board. I will say that I asked legislative council to review local law number 3 of 2008, which was an adoption in Ulster County of Public Officers Law 18, which is, a defense and indemnity of any officer in the context of a civil action in state or federal court. The AG's opinion that Nick references for me notes that a locality could, by local law, expand the scope of circumstances where a defense and indemnity are permitted. So we could, by local law, amend our local law on indemnity to indemnify legislators or others on. It doesn't have to happen in the ethics law. We can amend the. You remember the law we did in 2008?
Yeah. By changing that, you then basically make it ineligible to be heard then by the ethics board, right?
No. What it would do is it would provide for indemnity and defense.
So then you can get an action
before the ethics board.
Okay, all right.
In theory.
I'm going to call on Jonathan and Heidi.
I was just going to go off, you know, say off of Dave's point and then off of Hector's previous point and a combination of it where you could make the per diem council available and then have it the law amended to the ethics committee would have to mm-hmm. go out to an independent if it's involving any elected official.
Okay.
Yeah. However, if it's like say an employee of the county,
sure.
For both fiscal or just the sense of it, it makes sense to have the county attorney involved.
Okay. That makes sense.
You know, I think that way you can kind of
yeah
adjust those two issues.
Heidi.
Okay.
Have we ever had an elected official conflict like this?
Well, I think we now have 3 of them, right?
I couldn't really speak to that, but I was just curious because, Dave, you've been a legislator for how many years?
I haven't seen any, no.
I mean, the only...
They've never been brought up in those. There's been no charges brought up to anybody that I can ever remember.
The ethics board is mostly since we created it in 2008.
Well, you the charter. We had an ethics board before that.
Yeah, there was an ethics board.
But we changed it. We had a comprehensive ethics law that was passed in 2008. And it's been primarily used for advisory opinions on who should or shouldn't abstain on what. I know several legislators that have received advisory opinions in the last 2 years, and I know several that received them in the previous 2 years. But I'm not aware of any legislator who's been brought up on ethics charges prior to this year.
So this year we've had legislators brought up on ethics charges?
Three. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Well,
because the proceedings are confidential.
Yeah.
In theory.
Unless
chairman of the ethics board talks about it in the paper.
That too.
So you're all going down.
Now, Kenny, this has to go in front of the voters next November.
It would. Yeah. So we have time. I'll work on making this amendment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To make it specific for conflicting out if it's dealing with an elected official or
be an automatic trigger.
Yeah. Automatic trigger for independent counsel.
And we also need to do the
an amendment then at that point, though, also to the 2008, what was it,
Yeah, it was Local Law number 3 of 2008. Yeah.
So we may have to go and amend.
I'll talk to Nick about drawing something up.
Public officers law.
Yeah.
Okay, motion to postpone this?
So moved.
Second?
I'm moving at the request of the sponsor.
I thank everybody for their comments and suggestions. I'm always in favor of building these things at the committee level.
So. All in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Thank you.
Do we have any other things to postpone?
We've done all the postponing we need to tonight.
If we're going to talk about...
Oh, we can postpone more.
Well, we could postpone talking about proposal for law number 24 if you want.
Okay, I move to postpone.
Herb, can you do the honorary?
No, I can't. I'm not on the committee.
But
I would vote to postpone the adjournment.
What
was the last one we got?
Reducing the size of the legislature.
Yeah, reducing the size of the legislature from 23 to 21. I haven't had anybody, does anybody want to give me any feedback on that?
Well,
go ahead.
I don't want to repeat our last meeting on the subject. I'm just going to say that we just need to think about representation. If we're going to have a conversation about reducing the size of the legislature, which I'm perfectly fine with, it's got to be focused a lot more on the concept of representation. And I think that's something that Heidi, you had mentioned as well, that, then we should be thinking about, should it be like 13 part-time, half-time or three-quarter time or nine full-time, meaning I think if we're going to talk about reducing the size of the legislature, we should probably be talking about increasing the participation by those legislators, but also probably then at that point the salaries, so that way you actually have legislators who are then making this their full-time job or mostly their full-time job.
Okay, would we have then offices up here in the county building?
I mean, I'm not the one proposing this. I'm just saying that if you're going to have a conversation, like, I understand the intent, and I'm not poo-pooing you. I'm just saying that if, we had this conversation last month, I could almost kind of say refer to our previous comments, our collective comments, which was if we're having a conversation about representation, right, meaning that we're increasing, we may be decreasing the size of the legislature physically, less people, but that those people now are being held more accountable.
Well, I think at 21 we'd be still doing the same jobs as 23. And Dave, you want to add something?
Yeah, not only that, but in reality, when we came up with the 23, it was sort of a compromise move. It wasn't really, and we kind of rushed through it because we went from 33 to 23.
Well, it was also, Mr. Chair, it was also that 10 legislators that year were retiring, so it's made it sort of convenient.
Right, and and so in my mindset, it really should have been, legislative body should be in, a multiples of three, but not divisible by two, typically, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Because you don't do 18, because then you can have nine guys. But you can do 21 because you all have it. It'll be 11-10. That's typically what they are, and that creates a very clear two-thirds for overrides and that type of thing. But that's my mindset of this, and I really wanted to correct this. Actually, Fred Wadnola wanted to put it in, but the reason I did not support it when Fred Wadnola wanted to put it in was because Fred Wadnola wanted to put it in, in which we would have had to redistrict again before the 10 years was up, which would have created a whole other nightmare that made no sense. So it makes more sense if you're going to do this at the time that you're going to redistrict, and then you're dealing with, you're killing two birds with one stone, shall we say.
It makes more sense since it's my idea.
I thought his idea wasn't a bad idea. What would have been the cost? It would have cost us more. We would have had to automatically redistrict. Yeah. We'd have to bring in all these the experts to come in, redistrict again.
Kevin, and that means
you'd have a new new constituents like 3 years after you just got the last new constituents. So it made more sense to do it on, like we did that when we went from 33 to 23, we did it on a time when we were going to redistrict anyway.
I'll take another ED in Shanka.
I'll take one, too.
You're so generous.
I am. I don't want Gardner.
I love the place that I live. That's all.
All right. I think I'd like to thank Jay for her work on the budget last week, bringing that and getting all the notes together, and her work in putting this together tonight. Behind the scenes here, that's make things work here, the girls in the office, and I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Nobody wants to vote on this.
Not tonight. Yeah. Want to rush?
Yeah.
I'll make a motion, we postpone it.
It's not an official resolution, is it?
Yeah. No business?
We'd have to do it as a late.
Want me to postpone it anyway?
Go ahead.
I'll make a motion to postpone.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'll do it at 9 if you want.
I'm in. Let's do it. Go big or go home. That's what my mom taught me.
Is the recorder still on?
Because you kind of motion to adjourn.
I moved to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you all.